Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. My name's Erin and I'm a hypnobirthing and antenatal instructor, birth activist and all-round birth geek. In this podcast, I chat to experts in the field of pregnancy and birth, debunking myths around birth, diving into the research around maternity care and exploring what is it that means you're more likely to have a positive birthing experience. If you enjoy this podcast, do feel free to buy me a coffee and fund my caffeine habit. Link to my Buy Me a Coffee page is in the podcast info. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. Today, I am very, very happy to welcome Sophie Birch, who is from The Mama Coach. Sophie has four children, including twins, and she is a cognitive behavioral hypnotherapist, mindfulness coach, as well as specializing in perinatal mental health and training in PTSD and trauma. I'm really excited to speak to you today, Sophie. It's been a long time planning getting our podcast together, hasn't it? So I'm really, really, really pleased to have you on. Do you want to introduce yourself a little bit in more detail to everybody that's listening?
Oh, thanks, Erin. Yeah, I've really looked forward to this conversation. And always the best things, you know, come to those who wait, don't they? It's such a cliche, but it's really true in so many ways. So, I'm Sophie Birch, mum of four, including twins. And I've been working in the parent baby world for 17 years. So when I got pregnant with my first baby, it changed my life to the point where I totally changed my career. I'm really passionate about supporting parents, you know, antenatally through birth and postpartum and all the way through parenting, really, because I believe it's such a significant transition in our lives and not something that we're necessarily conditioned to really recognize. I think that often hindsight's, you know, such a witch, isn't it, really? You look back and you go, I wish I had, you know, I wish I'd done more of this. I wish I'd done more of that. I wish I'd thought about this. I wish I'd felt this, you know, and I'm kind of in the business of helping people to recognize where they're at and to try to you know, enjoy the moments more and to overcome some of the hard days. By doing just that. So I'm really big on the kind of mindfulness idea around pregnancy, birth and childhood as well. But, you know, my why is because I've experienced it, you know, four times, although my last pregnancy was twins. And I've had three very different birthing experiences. And I've had really very little support all the way through every one of those. And so, again, it kind of really instills this mission in me, actually, to ensure that there are more opportunities out there for people to be feeling more supportive or to know that there is support out there for them to confidently reach out for it. So as the mama coach, I work one-to-one with people, as well as I work with groups now, less so in terms of the hypnobirthing. I just do one-to-one hypnobirthing now, but I train professionals who work with people antenatally and postnatally and in birth, all about perinatal mental health. And also I've created a parent support sort of, it's not a course really, it's more like standalone sessions around specific themes that anybody can bring into their lives, with the idea based around the fact that, you know, the formative years of our children, we are putting our children first all the time, aren't we? This is the, you know, the minute our babies are, you know, in our bellies, it's all about the baby. And then, of course, postpartum, we are meeting baby demands all the time. We want the best for them. It's important that we put ourselves first, but we're not conditioned to do that. So, you know, we have to consider the fact that those from pregnancy up until age five, and some would say age seven, are the most important years of our lives as a human being. So as parents, we want to help and make the best start for our babies, and are not equipped necessarily with the ability to model healthy emotional regulation and, you know, managing anxiety, managing stress, all of that. So, you know, that affects our babies and our children. It shapes who they become. As much as that's a bitter pill to swallow for many, they are how we are, and they will be how we are in those moments. So that's my message now more than ever, is that we really, you know, there's a lot of stress out there in the world, and there's a lot of stress particularly around giving birth, and we can learn things that can help us to manage that stress, but equally we need to be held as well, and we need to learn how to nurture ourselves better so that then ripples out to our children. And now, you know, for me, 17 years later, I'm seeing that in my kids. I'm seeing the efforts that I put in genuinely. And I don't get it right all the time. I'm sure they'd be the first to tell you that I do shout, that I do, you know, lose my rag. But I have learned ways to get through my pain, my stress, you know, my hard days and my good days, that have demonstrated to my children how they can do the same. And I'm seeing that. And, you know, just to give you an example, like my 17-year-old is, you know, he's been going through quite a lot in the last few years. His age group all have, with the pandemic and exams and so much going on, really. You know, they're separated from their friends, and then they're, you know, there's loads going on. And he, you know, he's really grounded. He knows how to ground himself. He knows how to practice mindfulness. He talks to me about how he's thinking and feeling. And that isn't just in his character, it is because that's what I've demonstrated to him. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I do what I do now, because it's like, actually, we've got a really great opportunity, not only to help ourselves to cope better and to stress less, which is what we all want, right? But equally to, you know, do that for our children too. Not all the time, but in a better way. So that hopefully, you know, in an ideal world, when they become pregnant, they say, why wouldn't we take care of our emotional health and our mental health? Like, why wouldn't we look at our relationships and try and work on them? And, you know, those things, rather than how am I going to get this baby out of me? And what equipment do I need to buy, you know, to make everything look nice? It's a big difference, right, to where we're at right now.
Mental health does take a back seat, doesn't it? It's, I mean, we don't prioritize it. The NHS also doesn't prioritize it, you know, and then we do end up struggling postnatally. And you know, it's a very common theme across birth workers, that a very large proportion of us have had traumatic experiences. We have struggled with our birth experiences. We've struggled postnatally. You know, we've had anxiety, we've had postnatal depression. And that's what triggers that desire to drive change. You know, that's why I do what I do, exactly the same thing. You know, I had a traumatic first birth and a much better second and third birth. At births, and thought, oh God, like, I need people to know that it doesn't have to be this experience, and the impact that negative experience has on mental health and mental well-being and your relationships with your children and how you parent them and your relationships with your partner. All of those things are shaped by, you know, potentially how you give birth. So you mentioned that you had quite negative experiences with your birth, and you struggled with the postnatal period. So do you want to talk a little bit about what happened and why that made you change your career?
Yeah, for sure. So I was told in my early 20s that my polycystic ovarian syndrome was so severe that I probably couldn't conceive naturally. So I had a career. I was working in film production. I'd been a singer for years and then got into feature film production, co-productions, was having a great time thinking, right, I'm going to be a career girl. And then I met my now husband, and 9 months into that relationship, living separately, he was in London, I was in Brighton, we fell pregnant And that was a bit of a shock, obviously, because I'd been told that most likely wouldn't conceive. I didn't really ovulate. I'd been going through lots, you know, I'd sort of given myself up as a bit of a guinea pig to this guy called Professor Franks, who was a leading, he's written a book on PCOS. He's a really lovely guy, and I'd been seeing him for a while. And they were doing all sorts of hormone tests, and basically the conclusion was, yeah, you know, you're going to need a lot of help to get pregnant. Doesn't mean you definitely can't, but you're going to need help. So obviously, for finding out I was pregnant with Ollie was a bit of a shock, especially as I definitely, you know, I was in a serious-ish relationship with my husband now, but we were living separately. You know, I only saw him every other weekend. It was changing suddenly, but also working in that business as a production coordinator, which I was at the time, meant that I had to be first on, last off in everything, and I get calls in the middle of the night, and it was hard. And actually, the people that I worked for didn't like the fact that I'd become pregnant. They tried everything in their power to get rid of me and made my life an absolute misery. So I developed antenatal depression, which I didn't know at the time, but I was not myself. I was just really determined to try to get to 6 months pregnant, which was when I'd agreed to live with my husband, move into London. So I knew I would be leaving my job. And I had to get to that point, but it was hard. And now I'm looking back on it, I don't know how I coped. I was on my own being pregnant, going through hell. And I kind of just dug deep. And also this new relationship, you know, I was just like, wow, what do I do? Luckily, years before, I trained as an aromatherapist and in holistic massage and anatomy and physiology. And I got these things that I was really interested in. I loved complementary therapies. And I was just like, at some point in my life, I really want to do something with that. So when I finally moved in with my husband, I got myself a temping job. And I thought, right, once I've had my baby, I didn't want to have to go back into working in film. I knew that wasn't going to work with a child as well. So I was like, I have to reinvent myself. So I thought, I'll teach baby massage to start, and I'll do pregnancy massage and things. So it was like, okay, starting to think about my little cottage industry, living back in London again. And sure enough, you know, that's what happened. But Ollie's birth was really traumatic. He was a shoulder dystocia delivery. And they had to all jump on me. I felt like they twisted me in half. And the obstetrician that was stitching me up afterwards said it was the first time she'd ever gone through that. And her hands were shaking so much. It was just, everybody was in shock. He was flatline. They had to break his collarbone to get him out. And they resuscitated him for more than 3 minutes and whisked him off into NICU. All I saw was a grey floppy baby and thought he'd died. Convinced myself that I was never meant to have a baby, that this was some kind of cruel twist of fate and nature, that, you know, this was a lesson that I had to learn. I had a bit of a psychotic moment now that, you know, now I do what I do. I completely see what happened. But he was in NICU, and it was 6 hours later I was wheeled to go and see him. All that time convinced, even though my husband had gone and taken a picture of him and then brought it back, I still didn't accept or believe that he was alive. I thought they were doing it to be kind to me. And that was the start, really, of a new journey for me. So we were in hospital for a week, got him home amazingly. He made such a quick recovery. They said that because he'd been deprived of oxygen for such a long time, there may be issues. There never have been. We are so lucky. But we got home, he had colic. I think he had reflux, even though that was never diagnosed. And he was very, very stressed. Re-stressed, understandably, right? You know, we now know that that would have, the cortisols in my system would have flooded him with them, etc., etc. I had a very stressful pregnancy too. So I had this baby who was really live wired. And of course, I didn't have any support. I had no family around. Nobody to say to me it's not his fault. So I thought I had this baby that was manipulating me. I thought, why have I been given this really angry child, this baby that just keeps crying? He was so strong, he was big, and it all felt really threatening to me. And I nobody followed up what had happened to me at all. Nobody came to check. We had to phone up the hospital because he was born on Christmas Eve, so I think there was an admin error, and we had to phone them up and say, "Is the midwife coming to see us? Because I've had stitches, and is somebody going to come?" And eventually, somebody came and was just like, "Oh my God, have you not had anybody come and check on you?" No, this was a couple of weeks later. So that was the start, really. And of course, I had to land in a new place, really get to know new people. But luckily, I did make friends. And I started my business as baby massage instructor. And actually, I was postnatally depressed, but didn't know it. For that first year, my way of coping was to dive into work, and that was my way of trying to kind of establish an identity and avoid the thoughts and feelings I was getting, because I was getting really awful nightmares. I couldn't go near the hospital. I was really traumatized. Massive flashbacks all the time, and of course didn't know what was going on. So all those intrusive thoughts that I would have, I was terrified. I thought, oh my God, I don't tell anybody because they'll take my baby away from me, because I'm obviously going mad. I've obviously lost the plot here. I remember that's what I was thinking. Couldn't tell anybody. But what I didn't know was that my husband, who had got to know me a little bit, was starting to see that I wasn't right. He was very worried about me. He was Some mornings he's told me since, he didn't want to go to work because he was scared of leaving me with Ollie. He didn't know what was going to happen. I was angry. I was so angry. But yet, baby massage was a blessing because it was pure therapy for me. And I was seeing people come through the door of those classes that had gone through similar experiences or not, who were just not bonding with their baby, who were just finding it really hard. And they didn't have any support either. So we would sit and we would stimulate all that lovely oxytocin in the room, and we would, work through things and learn together. And I was like, actually, this is really powerful, this baby massage. And it was the only thing that I had that really connected me with Ollie as well. So in a year later, on his first birthday, my mum said to me, "You're not yourself." And for the first time, I just broke down completely, and came clean about a lot of the thoughts and feelings I was having, which shocked the hell out of everybody around me, because I'd just been holding it together for all this time, like rabbit in the headlights, basically, just like I think I'm so lucky in so many ways, but I was still so angry with the system for not being there for me. I was angry at my mum. She lived abroad, but she could have been there with me, but she was just like, "Oh, Soph will be fine," because that was how it was always like in my family. "Soph will be fine. She'll sort it out. She'll work through it. She's had some hard times. It's not a problem. She'll do it." They always just assumed that I was the strong one, but on the inside, never, never, never that case. And so, a year later, I finally go to the GPs, terrified that if I answer the questions on the form correctly, they're going to take Ollie away from me. Social services will get involved. There'll be, if I dare tell anybody some of the thoughts that I'd had, it was like, I can't even begin here to express what's going on. But at least I stepped through the door of the GPs and I answered the questions on the form. I lied, but it still showed that I was I had postnatal depression. Nobody once suggested that I might have birth trauma as well. I would then have waited 6 months to go and see somebody for CBT. So it was 6 months later. But what the GP had done was prescribed me with some sertraline, which is an SSRI, so serotonin replacement. And that did take the edge off. It was a small dose, 50 milligrams, but it just took the edge off for a bit. Enough for me to keep going with my business and start to think a bit more clearly, got a bit more perspective, started to, you know, because I'd shared everything on Ollie's birthday and around that time, I had released quite a lot. I had allowed, you know, I started to journal and I started to kind of, you know, look at what I already knew about anatomy and physiology and about massage and really connecting, kind of coming out of my head into my body and really starting to appreciate those experiences, those skills that I had as well, and using that in the sessions that I was running with other people. I was getting really busy in my business, running quite a few classes a week. It was going well, and I was constantly seeing people struggling though, and I was like, I need to do more. So by the time I had CBT, which inspired me then to become a cognitive behavioral hypnotherapist, you know, but it was great, but it never touched on the birth trauma. And it really didn't necessarily touch on the postnatal depression either, because the person I went to was not trained perinatally. She didn't understand about perinatal mental health and the, you know, all the different range of issues that come with that. So whilst the CBT was very useful, it didn't necessarily deal with the issues that I was experiencing. It wasn't until years later, when I was actually doing my training as a therapist, that a lot of that then started to be processed. And I started to, loads of penny dropping moments of just going, oh my God, totally. But what I did do was I trained to be a hypnobirthing teacher. So by the time I fell pregnant with my second baby, which was 2 years later, and I was really scared as well, because I was scared of having the same experience. My first thoughts were book in for a cesarean, because you just don't want to go through that again. But then I did my research and I realized that, you know, shoulder dystocia is quite random, it's quite rare, and that it didn't necessarily mean that that was going to happen again. It took quite a lot of persuading of the hospital and the midwives actually to let me have my home birth, that I was really determined about, because I'd realized that going to hospital had actually made me freak out. It was a place I didn't want to be in. So, you know, obviously having learned to be a hypnobirthing teacher, everything was coming really clear for me. I was like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. So I did have a battle on my hands, but I dug my heels in and I said, no, home is where I need to give birth to this baby. And through gritted teeth, they sent me a couple of brilliant home midwives who were absolutely amazing. And I had my second baby at home, using hypnobirthing. I didn't need any pain relief. And it was a really healing, incredible experience. Absolutely amazing. I mean, he was 10 pounds too. He was still pretty big. And we had a bit of a hairy moment second stage, where they were like clock watching and going, we need to speed things up. And it was actually getting out of the birthing pool and widening my pelvis that was more, and the gravity that helped, that we all ended up in a heap on the floor with babe in arms. It was quite comedy, really. And I thought, if I can do this, then I've got to really, really share this with others. But then what happened was Milo had reflux, really severe silent reflux, and we didn't get diagnosed with it for 20 weeks. So I had actually a lot of stuff that came up from postpartum with Ol. So even though I'd had a really beautiful birthing experience and I was honestly on cloud nine, once the oxytocin levels dropped, and I wasn't getting the sleep, and this beautiful baby of mine was just crying all the time, and he was so uncomfortable and I felt so helpless, all of these old thoughts and feelings were coming up. So it re-traumatized me. All the depression came back. And even though I kind of knew what was going on, you know, you're still quite dissociated, especially with that tiredness, you're just in that phase. But luckily at that time, I was able to talk to people and I was able to help myself so much more, because I knew so much more. And I, you know, felt sad and felt like a failure and all of those things, but I was way better equipped. So I did my usual. I went and trained to be a hypnotherapist because, you know, that I was just like avoidance, like I need to learn more things that are going to help me to help myself and then help others. So while I was going through all of that, I didn't have any more CBT, but training to be a therapist was the therapy that I needed, and then therefore helping others as well was enough. But there were some pretty scary times. There were some really hairy, scary times. But that was when the seeds of my book were created, really, and my course, because I really, really was seeing such a gap in support grassroots. You know, people like me who were lying on forms that needed more support but weren't getting it, people who were just being told to go and read a book on relaxation or listen to an audio by their GPs, by their midwives who needed more support, but also equally people who were okay and resilient emotionally, but were going through a hard time and needed ways to cope better. And loads of people just being slipped through the net, the fear around mental health. You know, so many people say to me, I don't dare tell anybody what I'm thinking and feeling because I'm really scared about what will happen. I don't want people to think I'm mad. I don't want my baby to be taken away from me. You know, it affects everything. It ripples out into work, it ripples out into, you know, your friendships, your communities, your family, everything. And you know that so many people suffer in silence and carry that sort of fear and shame around with them. And I was just like, no, not having it anymore. This has to change. So I'd started to expand in my postnatal sessions and antenatal as well, a little bit more on skills training. Yeah, so just a bit more around what I learned with hypnobirthing, affirmations, the power of language, how to relax more, how to use breath work, and very importantly, grounding techniques. And it started to really help people in my group. So we'd have baby massage, but we'd also have what I would call it sort of mindful parenting as well sessions. And it was just blossoming really nicely. People were really responding to it very well. And I was just like, yes, yeah, something, you know, is growing here. But then, Erin, I got pregnant with my twins. We were moving out of London. And I had actually lost a baby as well early. And we'd said we weren't going to try anymore. And that was a really tough time. My husband also had lost his job at that point, and that was 2008, when the recession happened, and we were having to sell our house in London. It was the only money we had, and we were going to move out to Wiltshire, which was near where my mum was living at the time. I found out when we landed in Wiltshire, basically. My husband then got a job back in London, the irony. But we would move. Then I found out I was pregnant with the twins, and we didn't even remember making them. So it was definitely one of those wonderful random acts of nature. And of course, there's no twins in my family, so it was a really big shock. But obviously, I didn't find out straight away. So I spent the first 3 months of that pregnancy with severe hyperemesis and almost narcolepsy. I thought there was something terribly, terribly wrong with me, and I just landed in this new place. We were miles away from a hospital. I was like, "What the hell's well, how I'm doing? I've got these two little boys. We don't know anybody." So here we go again. I'd gone and we'd sort of forced ourselves out of the what we'd got in terms of the community. At least our friends were like our family in London, and we'd just gone and landed somewhere completely new. And I was pregnant. But then my plans had been to carry on my business where I was. But I was so unwell in that pregnancy that I just had to pause for a while. But the twin pregnancy, unfortunately, was diagnosed as twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome. And so we had a really hairy time. We're very lucky, they're okay. But every week I was having to have scans, and we were told that there might not be a heartbeat the next time. I dug deep in terms of all the resources that I had, all the, you know, but it's still not enough. I found people to support me in terms of professionals. So I was having therapy and hypnotherapy as well, which did really help. Having my mum a bit closer was useful because she was able to drive me the miles and miles I had to go to Oxford to the John Radcliffe to have these scans. They did offer me certain procedures that are really invasive, and they do carry quite a lot of risk for the babies to help to correct the twin-to-twin transfusion. But I tried to go with my gut feeling, and I refused them. And luckily, we got to 28 weeks, and then my body had created this amazing new blood vessel, which counterbalanced the blood flow from the placenta to the twins and the twin to twin. And suddenly we didn't have twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome anymore. Amazing. I mean, really, really miraculous. And suddenly I was able to properly bond with the babies because I'd spent that whole time scared to bond with them. Just, it was really, really full on. And then I got a lot of pressure then from the consultants to deliver them anyway. Because they kept saying to me, it can come back, it can come back anytime. We need to get these babies out. Anyway, I held on to them until just before 33 weeks. And they were born by cesarean section, and whisked into NICU. So that was another NICU situation for me that I had to overcome. And that was hard work and very re-traumatizing in lots of ways. And hindsight, I don't know if I did the right thing. Now I worked all these years doing what I do, and I've worked with people who've experienced twin to twin, and especially NICU parents as well. And I wonder if I did the right thing by, agreeing to that cesarean section when I did. But I was really afraid, and it was so difficult to know what to do, even though I'd been told the twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome did not exist anymore. There was still this pressure to birth them, and I knew that I was going to have to go into NICU again. I'd asked for psychological support within NICU, and I was been told that there was, but then the reality was that there wasn't any. And that was really, really hard. So when we finally landed home 4.5 weeks later, they'd been tube fed. They weren't great at the beginning, especially little Bo, who was twin two, who hadn't really thrived very much. There's a big, significant size difference between them. We got home, and they both had reflux, severe reflux, and I didn't have any support. What I did again in that next year with very, very little support and very little sleep was create Beyond Birth. I dug deep into all my resources, and I started to write about what I really feel like parents needed, antenatally and postnatally, and certainly during birth. And so all of it was born. So the book, and then the training, the parent support sessions, and then the training happened over the next few years. I was also working as a hypnobirthing teacher as well. Sort of gonna, did my usual kind of put all my energy into helping others so that I could help myself. Because, that well-meaning thing is actually a really big part, since I've done the trauma training, is actually a really big part of recovery from trauma. So that's sort of my story. And now I've got 200 people worldwide who've done my training, who are, bringing Beyond Birth to parents. But, my story is a really sad one, but I have absolutely grown from every experience. I've really learned from it so much, and the empathy and the compassion that I have for people who are going through pregnancy generally, and birth generally, and postnatally is huge. And I think that, if I could at least, continue that in a small way to make sure that we know that some people at least are being helped, then that will be great. It'll be the best thing ever. But it's not easy. As we were talking before, running a small business these days, it's tough because you have to be everything to everybody. And I've still got four kids, right? That I need to be there for. But anyway, so I've gone on and on and on.
I think you are amazing. Like, genuinely, you are amazing. I've experienced a fraction of the struggles that you've gone through, and I don't know how you built a business and you built, all of this course and all of this, and you shared so much when you were going through so much. I mean, it breaks my heart to hear, because I can genuinely empathize. I had a child, my eldest had silent reflux, which wasn't diagnosed till she was 8 months old, which cause of my postnatal depression. So I can really, really understand and empathize, because silent reflux, it's so difficult. It's so difficult. And all the things that you were saying about, not wanting to tell anybody about all these intrusive thoughts that I was having, and feeling guilty because I regretted having my child, because I thought, this is so hard, and what have I done to my life? Like, I wish I hadn't had her, because I can't cope. It's too difficult. All of these awful feelings that you have, which we don't share, because we feel like, we should be coping, and we feel like we're going to get stigmatized, and we're going to get, social services are going to be called, or we're going to be seen badly because we can't cope and we're struggling. I can personally empathize and identify with all of that. And you're right, there's no, the support is not there. We all know the NHS is struggling. Wait times to see somebody. It took 6 months for you to see someone. It's probably even longer now, because
It
there's a desperate need for support and help, like you're providing. And it's heartbreaking that you had to go through that to create this wonderful resource and this wonderful course. But I mean, it's so fantastic that you're doing it, because you'll be helping so many people that would not be getting that help otherwise.
Yeah, thank you so much. And what I'm seeing is lovely, actually, is the practitioners that have trained with me. Some of them have gone on to form social enterprises, and so they're actually able to access funding that means that they can bring the sessions to their communities that are subsidized or free, as well as run the sort of private sessions for those who can afford it too, which is just so incredible. I mean, don't get me wrong, the voluntary and community sector in the perinatal world is amazing. There's a community called the Hearts and Minds Partnership, which is just absolutely fun. I mean, amazing, amazing. I love what they do so much. But a lot of them are real kindreds like me, who've come to it because of this work. Like you said, yes, absolutely. I think that there are many, many, a great many birth workers who come into this work because we want to see change. We want to help others. And there is a tremendous amount of healing in that. There's also a danger with it, because if we're not trained properly, it can actually make things worse too. It can be re-triggering, especially if we've experience trauma, so we have to be trauma aware in what we're offering. And I've gone on a really long journey with being able to kind of provide this, because for a long time that real imposter syndrome of who the hell am I to be creating something that is going out into the public. Is it safe? Is it this? Is it that? And my training has been brilliant, the therapy training I've got. I really, really have worked very hard, but I haven't walked the hallowed halls of the British Psychological Society because I haven't got 7 years to put into doing a psychology degree. At my age, I'm 49 this year, so I had to do it differently. And so therefore that means that there are a lot of doors that are closed for me to be able to access. And equally, you know, that then fuels the imposter syndrome, doesn't it? But the realities are that I, you know, what I have to say to myself often is this, no, actually, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, these systems are there for support and for safety and for all the right reasons, but actually it doesn't always have to be done that way. And I think that, you know, what we're doing with specifically with Beyond Birth is it's very basic, it's very simple. We're not, you know, when it's not therapy, it's purely education and feel good factor, because it's all about tapping into how you can feel better. You know, improving your ability to communicate, to connect, to sit with your emotions, to process, you know, what you're experiencing, which invariably is extreme exhaustion, tiredness, and, you know, identity crisis for majority of us, isn't it? And those things are not specialist, you know, so we don't need to be seeing it as specialist. I think there are real misconceptions and stigmas around mental health still, and what that looks like. You know, look at my story in the fears that I had around having my baby taken away from me. You know, I know we talk about this with hypnobirthing as well, is how much responsibility the media has to portray more realistic in pictures of things. But of course, you know, those stories don't sell, do they? So what we see daily in the media, on the telly, what we read about, these stories stick with us and paint a picture in our minds that aren't real, but we believe they are. So, you know, we've got a bit of a job on our hands, haven't we? To get around that, because, you know, subconsciously the fear is there already before you've even kind of consciously started to try to do anything about it. But I think that, you know, if we're going to make change happen, which it needs to be, we have to be as real and grassroots as possible, and we have to learn maybe not to it, to override that kind of white coat syndrome a bit. And unfortunately, it's a scary situation, isn't it? The lack of trust and faith in the systems that we find ourselves in, and how do we overcome that? But we do that through antenatally, as soon as we learn we're pregnant, or even before, when we're trying for a baby, building emotional resilience and having these skills, these tools to be able to put things more into perspective when we need to, rather than going down a route that necessarily isn't right for us. But you know, I hope that by the time my kids are having children, you know, that they will be saying, why wouldn't we take care of ourselves like this? Like, it was a no-brainer, mum, you know? Like, of course we're going to need to be more mindful, and we're going to look at our relationships and learn how to calm and or meditate every day anyway, so that's fine.
You're modeling good behavior, right? And you're normalizing it. And I think that's, you know, it's really important. I mean, what I always talk about breaking sort of generational trauma and you know, changing the way we parent compared to the way that we were parented. And I think having an awareness of mental health and having methods to help us cope with the busy lives that we live. And modeling those for our children is really, really important, you know, from birth, because how you're feeling affects your child, you know. I mean, you were saying earlier, before we started recording, that it's Children's Mental Health Week. And you know, it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? That whole family unit, if you know, your mental health and how you're coping and how you deal with things and process things will ultimately affect and reflect the way that your child copes with things, right?
Because ultimately you are their safe place. They learn from you. Unfortunately, and it is God's law, they pick up on your emotions all the time, especially when they're very, very young. And how we are is how they are, and potentially how they're going to become, right? We shape their futures. It's a lot of responsibility, and it's awful because when you are having a bad day, it's, you know, you just, it's like, oh no, I don't want everybody to think, oh God, I'm really messing with my kid's head and their future when I have a bad day. But if we have if we prioritize ourselves in those moments, and even on the good days as well, then, you know, we have what we need to be able to cope with those moments, those triggering times, whatever they are, in a more healthy way that enables our children to bear witness to that, so they therefore accept that as the norm and grow up believing that. So kind of giving you an example, yeah. So often scrolling, yeah, on social media. So you get, you know, perhaps you've got your kids running around, you're in the kitchen or you're in the living room, you're sitting there just having a break. Maybe it's a bit of avoidance, you know, you need to escape from the moment. And you're scrolling, and then you start to feel a bit triggered because a bit, you know, you're suddenly feeling like, you know, you're not worthy or whatever it is, because social media can do that for you, right? Or suddenly you're feeling a bit rejected or abandoned or all these kind of, and so that comes out in us before we've even said anything, right? So if we are able to distance ourselves from that, we recognize it, oh, I noticed that, I'm feeling this, etc., then, and we can say it out loud, then our children bear witness to that and see that that is what is making us feel bad, rather than thinking it's them that's making us feel bad, because the first thing they're going to think is that it's them, that they've done something wrong. And it's these things, it's little things that we're like, oh God, I shouldn't have done that. I just noticed that I was scrolling, like, you know, I lost myself in there for a while and it's made me feel really bad, and I just need to take a minute and I just need to breathe. And can we just have a hug? Because actually, you know, that makes us all feel loads better. And it's not you, it's me. And then they're like, yeah, okay, so that scrolling on social media thing isn't necessarily great for our heads. It definitely makes mum really aggy and irritable, and therefore this, and but this is how she's coping with that and coming back into the moment and loving us anyway. And that, you know, it's those things that really make the big difference. But we have to learn to do that, and that takes practice. Learning to distance from those triggering moments takes a bit of practice, but not a lot, just for a while, you know. So if we can learn that in pregnancy or even early parenting, I know it's harder in early parenting because we're so tired, learning anything new is hard, right? But just learning to relax a bit more and to breathe better and you know, gives you that sense of being more in control anyway. It's those things. So it's not rocket science. It's just the little things that are going to make a massive difference to our children and to their mental health. And they're so, so sensitive. And, you know, because we haven't been taught this, we're not considering it. But it's not our fault either. Yeah. And often when we're triggered, it's our inner child that's triggered in the first place. So it's, you know, it goes on and on and on through generations. Yeah. So how we are is how our parents were with us when we were really young. And same goes for them, their parents. And so it's not our fault. We can't blame ourselves. But what we have an opportunity to do right now is to break that cycle and to recognize it and to start to change, so that our children have more opportunities to at least to regulate their emotions in a more healthy way. I hope.
That is so true. It's so true. And I'm going to take everything that you've just said and I'm going to start doing it. You do it, right? And I actually think it's really hard to acknowledge when you're triggered. I think it's really hard to identify it and to consciously go, step back and go, oh God, okay. Rather than lashing out and rather than shouting and rather than, you know, reacting, to kind of stop yourself in the moment and go, hold on a minute, why am I feeling this way? Okay, acknowledge it. And then explaining it and voicing it. I think that it sounds like such a simple thing, but you're right. Yeah. It's practice because it is such a knee-jerk reaction, which is instilled in us from early childhood, that it is difficult to kind of just step back and go, oh, hold on a minute, I'm feeling this way. This is why. Let me just take a moment, remove myself from the room, or just take a breath, and then I'm okay to engage with whatever drama is going on with three small children.
Totally. Yeah, because the reason we were scrolling in the first place was probably because we were being triggered by our kids in that current environment. So we were trying to escape from that. So our autonomic nervous system was already in the spiky zone. And so when you're doing that, but then you're escaping into something that's potentially then more triggering, you're not siphoning off the stress in those moments, you're adding to it. And so, yeah. So just by changing the languages, I notice that I am feeling this, or I am thinking that, or I've gone into that catastrophizing mode, or I've got it, that's the sort of CBT element. It's recognizing these cognitive distortions that we use with ourselves all the time. And what it, I make it sound really easy, and I appreciate it takes repetition and practice. But, this is where repetition, practice, and learning something new really, it does come into its own. And equally, when you can combine that with self-hypnosis, for instance, rehearsing in your mind in a state of relaxation, perhaps when you're about to go to sleep, what went well today? How did I cope with that? How can I cope with the things that might come up tomorrow? You see yourself going through that in a state of relaxation. It's a different brain frequency that actually does start to change some of those old patterns that you've got anyway. So, and then of course you feel better because it produces the feel good stuff. So then you're like, oh, that's really good. I think I'm going to do that again. Pavlov's dog theory, we just keep coming back for more of those things that are good. We can program ourselves to do that. But again, we're so used to not having that. And often we need reminding that it does take a bit of time. It's not just like waving a magic wand, but I think if we can see these things as opportunities, it can definitely make a big difference. Yeah. And all is not lost at all. Often people will come to me and just say, I have completely screwed things up. Not only am I feeling depressed, anxious, I'm a mess, but look at what I've done to my kids. And the beauty of life is that, and especially the way we're designed, is that we can change, and certainly our children, it's neuroplasticity is the latest thing. Everybody's talking about it, but it's true. It's not set in stone, and that we can make these changes happen. And yes, the trauma that we experience does and will live in us for a long time, forever probably, but it gets easier, like grief. Yeah. We learn to live with it and cope with it better. And when our kids can see us doing that as well, then of course they are going to learn to do that for themselves. So I know I make it sound really simple because I see it so clearly now. But this is 17 years down the line. And I have to practice every single day what I preach just to get through. And the days that I don't, I'm a mess. By the end of the day, I'm just like, no go to anybody, and I'm just like, please don't talk to me because I'm probably gonna say something I regret. Even after all these years of practicing this, we still get there. But on the days that I am pulling it out of the bag and I'm pushing through the resistance and going for that walk in nature and being mindful and doing a bit of meditation and breathing and writing stuff down, I really feel like I'm healthier and certainly have more peace and more space in my head to be able to cope as well. Yeah, and I have to move my body every day as well. Don't know about you, but I have to.
Going for a walk, just getting out and going for a walk. I mean, going for a walk used to be my coping technique. Going for a walk, getting out in nature and just getting steps in. It's
Yeah.
not be underestimated. I'm very fortunate that I live in the sticks, so I have lovely places to go and walk. But even when I didn't, when I lived in quite an urban area, I would literally just walk round the block, round and round and round and round and round, with my son in the buggy napping. And that was a great help as well.
Absolutely. I used to call that pounding the pavements. I'd do that with the twins as well. I'd pop them in the buggy and off I'd go, pounding the pavements until I was just like, oh, I need to go sit down now. But it definitely helped.
So, you mentioned your book. Where? What's the book called? Reminds me, and where can people find it?
Yeah, so it's Beyond Birth, the Mindful Guide for Early Parenting. It's a great big A4 tome that you can get from Amazon, and you can write in it. There's questions, Q&As in there, so like space to write, as well as advice, ideas. It comes with 13 audios as well, so they're there if you're too tired to listen. I did record the audio version of the book last year, and I do plan at some point very soon to get that up and running as well, so people can listen to it rather than have to read. There's nice big writing in the book as well, because I totally appreciate that. especially early parenthood, you really can't be taking in too much new, and so it has to be kind of big, bold writing and easy things to do. And it is very much based around the feel-good factor and lightening the mood around what mental health is, and certainly emotions, normalizing so much and just giving sort of gentle suggestions on how to cope with that. And again, for all parents, so there is a section in there for dads and partners. But the parent support sessions that the practitioners train to run are based on the themes of the chapters of the book, but give parents an opportunity to reflect generally, but equally also encouraged to reflect by writing some of it down if they can, if they feel they want to. There's no obligation to do that. And just kind of looking at the things that we've got for free, like language, and how we can use our language and talk to ourselves as well as talking to others, but equally looking at, we use in hypnobirthing a lot affirmation, don't we? This sort of positive suggestion that gives us the direction or the reminder that we need of what we already inherently have within us or what we need to hear. And that's really powerful, especially, when we're becoming parents and maybe don't have parents, or we do, but they're not, available to us in the way that we need. One of the biggest lessons I learned was no needing to be parented, but recognizing the fact that I had, and I did, I wasn't feeling parented or supported, and realizing actually that it had to be me that parented myself anyway. Especially those kind of middle of the night feeds, when you're on your own. So even if you had somebody there, you're still feeling lonely. You've got probably partner snoring next to you, whatever. You're like, I'm still on my own. This is so lonely. This is so hard. I can't do this again. The amount of times and actually those moments of being, really opportunities to connect deeper with yourself, parent yourself. What is it that you need to hear right now? We all need to feel held. So one of the audios that I've created is about connecting with all the other parents in the world that are feeding with you at that time, and just think, ah, we're not alone. We're so all together, but we just can't see each other. And that really helps actually. But certainly, we do cover kind of like some of the heavier topics, like how we feel when babies are crying, and recovery, and healing from birth as well. I mean, every birth needs recovery time, right? But perhaps from some of the heavier stuff. But it's there available. So, most people love it. I'm no good at selling it because I'm just not, it's just not in my blood. So if you find it, that's a miracle and well done.
I'll tag it in the post. I'll share the post. I'll make sure there's a link so that people can go and find it. And where can
Yeah.
you find you on social media as well?
So I'm at the Mama Coach, which is MAMMA Coach, and there's another amazing Mama Coach in America. She's fantastic, but she's not me. And and then Or beyond underscore birth underscore guide, which is the Beyond Birth Collective. So that's the book, which is also available online as well. If you don't want to buy it as a hardback, it's under a tenner, which you can download onto your phone and use it as an app as well. So yeah, and the practitioners are there, and they're just an incredible bunch of kindred people. Majority have gone through levels of things themselves, but I've got midwives that I've trained as well who are really keen to do more because they want to work more proactively. And that's working beautifully for them. But anybody, breastfeeding counselors and antenatal and hypnobirthing and baby massage and baby yoga and all of it, it's good for everybody. And what I found is actually, a lot of the training is very much about learning to nurture ourselves and in order to be able to nurture others. So we practice what we preach. It's not about being a guru for sure, but it's very much about going, if I need to do this for myself so that I can share that to others, in a genuine, authentic way. And of course, so we see, great results with people who do the training because they're like, oh God, my life is just feeling so much, I'm more in control and just, better at saying no sometimes as well. And yeah, there's a lot that comes with it. So it isn't just about learning how to teach a class to parents. It's so much more than that. And that makes sense, doesn't it? If we're nurturing others, we need nurturing ourselves. I have therapy and supervision and all sorts as well. I couldn't do without it. It's part of my non-negotiable. I don't know about you. Do you have that as well?
I would love to say that I do, but I've got honestly, I'm really rubbish. So after this, I think I need to start reflecting more and like look after myself because I will definitely admit that I am absolutely rubbish at looking after myself, and I really, really should. So you've made me reflect a lot, actually. So the
Oh,
conversation has been good for my own mental well-being. So I
I'm
appreciate.
so pleased. But don't feel bad either. That's not what we're doing here. It's not to say, oh my God, you're awful and you should be doing all of these things, because no, not at all. And you know what, you may well be resourced enough and resilient enough not to need to dive into all of these things all the time. And that's great. That's a real bonus.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope that everyone goes and gives you a follow, and they need to go and get a copy of your book as well because it looks stunning. People on the podcast can't see it, but the artwork on the front also is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Yes, that's my lovely friend, quite popular artist now, Margot McDade. She's known as Margot in Margate. Yeah, she's done all the illustrations through the book. It's beautiful.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Sophie.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
The Better Birth podcast and all of its content is for educational and informational purposes only. You should consult your midwife or your doctor for anything in relation to your own pregnancy and birth. The opinions and the views of the guests on the Better Birth podcast are their own opinions and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Better Birth or Erin Fung.